Well, hey, everybody, welcome to part one of episode 233 of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. As always, it's brought to you by our good friends at Coldwell Banker Mid-America. Coldwell Banker is rooted in the legacy of our founder, renowned businessman and philanthropist, Marvin Pomeranz. We continue to tell his story through our love of people, homes, and the communities we serve. Our integrity guides our focus to empower people to make the best real estate decisions possible. We pair local ownership and knowledge with the power of an international brand and the most advanced technology to elevate the customer experience and expectations. Our network of resources allows us to be the number one Coldwell Banker franchise affiliate in Iowa, guiding you home for over 30 years. All right, well, we're going to talk a lot of Ankeny volleyball in part two of the podcast, which I'm going to record tomorrow night. But right now, my first guest in part one of the podcast is an Ankeny resident who is also the offensive line coach for the Dallin Catholic football team. So he's gearing up for Friday's showdown against Ankeny Centennial. He's been on the podcast a few times before, so it's nice to have him back. He's Andy Pollock. Andy, thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm glad you were able to have me on here. I understand I may have been your second option, but that's all right. We can share a lot tonight. Beautiful night, and yeah, this will be fun.
It's all good. Well, hey, before we break down Friday's game, let's kind of recap your team's season thus far. You guys are off to a 5-0 start, and you've won every game by at least two touchdowns. You already own wins over three other top 10 teams: Cedar Rapids, Kennedy, Ankeny, and Waukee Northwest. You know, you have to be really happy with where your team is at right now.
Yeah, when you put it like that, I guess it does sound like we got a pretty good resume to us so far. I think this team has been very good about being process driven and more about the things that they can control. That was a big talk that we had with our team sports psychologist at the beginning of the year, just how things were going to go, and focusing more on the process driven outcomes and not necessarily the end result of a lot of stuff, and how the process will lead to a good end result. So I think we're definitely a work in progress so far. We've on our own film, we see plenty of mistakes, but that's one of the benefits of knowing your own team, and sometimes one of the curses of knowing your own team too, is you do know your own shortfalls. But as you said, you know, it's better to be sitting where we are than the alternative right now.
Oh, for sure. Now, I wasn't at that Ankeny game on September 8th, but I think you guys had a 28-0 lead in that game on your way to a 35-14 win. And considering what the Hawks have done since, you know, do you think that was maybe your most complete performance?
Yeah, the Hawks have been super impressive. At the beginning of the year, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm the first. I didn't expect them to see them where they are right now, but they've got a couple really nice wins there. And as you look back, I think offensively wise, yes, we'd probably say that was one of our most complete wins. I think the defensive guys would probably pick up a couple of other games, but when you look at what they've did before and done since, that's a pretty impressive ball club that Coach Bauer's got down there on the south side.
Well, your offense has been pretty balanced this year. Your senior quarterback, Dante Cataldo, has completed 71% of his passes for 695 yards and four touchdowns. But first and foremost, you guys like to run the ball, of course. Junior running back Rashad Davis is having an outstanding year. He's rushed for 675 yards and 13 scores. And I know he kind of shared the running duties last year with C.J. Phillip, but you know, he's really excelled this year as the feature back, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's a guy. Rashad is someone all our kids like blocking for him. He's kind of the, I'm not going to call him the emotional leader, but he can almost be kind of a class clown type of guy. A lot of the guys enjoy being around Rashad. Works very hard and runs very hard. He's a guy that you never necessarily know where he's going to be. Once you give him the ball, really good nose for finding the gaps, squeezing through, runs hard. But Dante does a really nice job running as well. He's a dual threat quarterback for sure. Dante's been so good about taking what the defense gives him. He's just been really good with that. And the ability of those two, the kind of a two-headed monster in the back field, and then a bevy of some really strong receivers as well, very deep stable of receivers, has really helped us do some nice things offensively. Maybe not as explosive as some of the teams in the past, but we've been very efficient in what we're doing.
And I can't remember, did Dante play last year, or did he have to wait his turn to play?
Yeah, Dante actually started 2 years ago. Dante was our quarterback when Jackson Smolik, who ended up going to Penn State, Jackson broke his collarbone 2 years ago, so Dante was a starter, or one of our starters as a sophomore, then played a little bit situationally last year, and now technically in his second year as a starter, but did not start as a junior, so you can kind of figure out the math there. But a guy, his dad's our head sophomore coach, has been for a lot of years, and just comes from a really good football background, really understands the game. He's probably spent more time with me as the O-line coach than any other quarterback we've had before, especially with what he does in the run game. We've talked a lot about the reads and who we're blocking and understanding the protections, so it's been good to have a nice relationship with Dante, and a really nice kid, really great kid.
Well, I'm sure you feel like your offensive line has played a key role in the team's success. Did you guys have a pretty experienced line coming into the year, or most of these guys are new starters?
Yes and no. Two guys back that started regularly a year ago. Unfortunately, some injuries last year forced us to have a couple other guys that played throughout the course of the year. So Kyle Rocker's my left tackle going to Kansas State. Pretty highly sought after recruit. He's been starting for 3 years. Really nice guy to have around. Joe Fralak is my left guard. Joe has really, really committed himself to being a top quality football player over the last 8 to 9 months. Actually lost about 70 pounds to become a really athletic guard. Looks really good pulling, doing all the stuff we ask him to do. My center, Max Shelton, another multi. He was one of my starters a year ago. Max's dad, Casey, played at Iowa State. Casey's O-line coach with me as well. So we Casey and I really work well together. We play off each other very well. So that's been a lot of fun. Coaching Max, there, you know, Casey's about 6'6", and Max is about 5'10", so he got the short end of the stick there. But it's really talented, athletic, and smart. He's our field general out there. He split time a little bit with one of my juniors, Carter Smith, and Carter is still learning the position, but really trying to work him in. Carter's a very, very physical offensive lineman. He comes with offensive line with kind of mentality of a defensive lineman, so I love having him on our side of the ball. My right guard, Nate Agos, again, played sparingly a year ago. He got in quite a bit, again, due to injuries, probably wasn't ready a year ago, but is having a nice start to this year. And then a fun story, my right tackle, Isaiah Seymour, is a kid. He's 6'5", 305, so that sounds really good. He's only in his second year ever playing football. He was a cross-country runner and a swimmer until his junior year. You know, football is a sport that he always enjoyed, but just had never played it. He's really athletic, has a cannon for an arm. But Isaiah is a fun kid to coach, and he's still learning. He's a young pup, and I think he's starting to get a lot of college interest, not just from small schools, but from big schools as well, just because of the upside potential that he's got. So while Isaiah is still learning, fun kid, just a ton of fun, great student, and he's been a great kid to have in our program. We're really glad. I talk to him all the time just about, hey, we're glad to have you out, and he say, yeah, I wish I would have gone out earlier. I say, hey, it just makes it a great story that you weren't out up until this point and all the stuff that he's learned. And again, with his upside, I think that's what college coaches really like a lot. And then a couple of tight ends I've got. Will Leifker is a guy that's probably more of a wide receiver than a tight end, but he's really come along, especially over the last, when I talk about being process driven, Will's really come along in his blocking, and that's helped us out a ton over the last 2 to 3 games. He's improved a bunch there. And Charlie Darnell, our second tight end that we bring in the game, has helped out to creating an extra gap in the defense. And I think that causes issues when you've got a team that can create an extra gap in the run game, but also has the ability to RPO or hit some of those screens on the perimeter. That's been a big advantage to us. And, you know, honestly, our fullbacks are guys that they can make things work really well. Ian Middleton is a guy, sophomore. Jackson Miller, another one. They're both sophomores. They rotate in at fullbacks. Both have defensive roles, but just incredibly physical, and they've got that old school caveman meathead mentality of they're going to run through whatever. I mean, they just fit that bill of fullbacks we've got. Ian can carry the ball as well, but they help our run game go and allow us to do some things maybe in the last couple of years we have not been able to do, but a great couple of sophomores. Ian's brother was our tailback just a couple of years ago, Cam too, so that family has he's got another brother in the program. That family's got good ties to us, but they're fun guys to have on our side. We say that all the time. A couple of special teams nightmares for other teams as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's talk about your defense a little bit. You guys have already posted a pair of shutouts, and you're giving up an average of just 10 points per game. Linebacker Dylan Manning leads your team with 33 tackles. What would you say has been the strength of your defense?
Defense is they're kind of a work in progress still. I think they would say that as well. They have some really young guys starting. In fact, three sophomore starters are the four guys up front. It's been a group that their best football is yet to come. Dylan obviously is a special talent at linebacker. I know he's got some relatives up here in the Ankeny area. Some of the Mannings up in this direction, and so in fact, I think he may be a cousin to Maddie. I think even I think something like that. There's a connection there somewhere. But so Dylan is a great guy to have around. But we've got a couple very athletic D-backs. Our linebackers are guys that they're going to stick their nose in there and wreak havoc wherever they are. They're a group that plays fearless. I'd say that's their strength right now. Like you said, they posted a couple shutouts, which I think for the where our defense stands right now and where they are with the youthfulness that they have, I think that's outstanding that they've been able to do that. Probably have given up some drives, longer drives, and taking some more time off the clock and some more yards than some of our defenses in the past. But again, being process driven and not outcome driven, the points have not come along with those drives. So that's been a huge plus. And they seem to find takeaways at key moments. So that's been a really nice thing. And I think we play, as Kirk Ferentz would say, some complimentary football. We've been really good about that this year, about offense and defense, trading things off and putting each other in good situations.
Let's talk about the matchup against Centennial now. The Jaguars are off to a 3-2 start. And I know you saw their season opener when they lost to Ankeny in double overtime, and they kind of let that game get away from them. But they rebounded with a convincing win over Cedar Falls 2 weeks later. And then on September 15th, they took two-time defending state champ Southeast Polk down to the wire before dropping a 24-21 decision. You know, so they've really come on, haven't they?
It's a team that... not often do you turn a lot of heads with a loss, but I think that Southeast Polk game made a lot of people stand up and take notice. I think the jury's probably still out on a team like Cedar Falls right now to figure out how good they are. But when they played Cedar Falls, I know we had already got done with our game that night against Joaquin, or when they played Southeast Polk, excuse me, we had already got done with our game that night, and we were watching their game online, seeing things like, you know, Centennial's got the ball with a chance to win here at the end, and Southeast Polk is really the standard that the rest of us have held ourselves to the last couple of years. They've certainly had some outstanding athletes over there come through their program. But Centennial, I think what you're seeing right now is a team that's coming together. I know there's some pretty high, lofty goals for that team, and I've watched a lot of these kids grow up and seen what they can do at the lower levels, and not just in football but in other sports. And so the preseason accolades and what people were expecting from them may not have been right there at the beginning of the year, but I think you're starting to see this team come together and play some really good football.
Well, after giving up 39 points to Ankeny, the Jaguars have allowed just 43 points over the last four games. Cole Pieper leads the team with 29.5 tackles, and the Jaguars have picked off six passes this season, including a pair of pick sixes by Drake Dittmer in the win over East last weekend. You know, what's impressed you about their defense?
Well, their D-line, and they rotate a lot of guys in there, but their D-line is a group of guys that play, not necessarily, I wouldn't call them playmakers, but they know their role, and I think that's a big part of any successful team is your guys know their role, and their D-line keeps offensive linemen off their linebackers, and they do a really nice job of that. They demand double teams, and it makes it really tough to get to them. And the other thing that's so impressive about the defense that Centennial plays right now is they're able to do so much. We've seen a three and a four-man front, and they just change up the angles that they play on defense, so it makes it really tough to game plan. Your offensive guys, your linemen have to be really on their toes a bunch to be able to make the checks at the line and get into good situations based on where they are. But the fact that they're able to do as much as they've done, we've seen so many different looks front-wise and coverage-wise from them. So preparation, you simplify it quite a bit and make sure that you can run what you do really well against a bunch of different looks. And that also creates a challenge because you're putting a lot on your guys out on the field to react to what they see each time too. So that's the fact that they're able to do all that and coach those guys into not only getting lined up right, but to play the different techniques. It's different, you know, playing an inside shade on the tackle as opposed to an outside shade on the tackle to somebody that's just sitting here listening. Maybe, okay, who cares? You're boring us right now. That's very different. When you got a guy coming at you from the outside trying to pin you inside, or a guy from the inside trying to block you out, those are two totally different things based on where the ball's coming from. So to teach guys to do that and be successful at it, obviously they're coached very well.
Well, yeah, I've only seen them play two or three times, but boy, Isaiah Bassett's had a great year. I mean, he's a guy that you guys got a game plan for.
Yeah, Bassett's a guy, and his strength is in his pass rush. I mean, he's an upfield, hard upfield player. He's going to be a guy that you got to know where he is, especially on long yardage situations. As a beast, he gets off the football. He's there around it a lot. They use him. They'll drop him off in some zone blitz situations too. He's a long body, and that's where you just, you know, as a O-line coach, you can scheme up all the best things in the world, but sometimes the other team just has a better athlete, and you hope that at some point you've coached your guys to react to different things that they see a little bit better and that you can be successful. But Isaiah is a guy that we certainly know where he's at on the field at all times. Another guy that I was really impressed with, and I had to look him up, and as soon as I saw the name, I saw that makes a lot of sense, was Nash Taggart, and seeing him out there. He's a guy that I had identified early on as, you know, that he's reading his keys. You can tell he's doing what he's coached to do. And, you know, remember watching his brother do a lot of the same stuff, and he looks very similar. Once I saw the name on the roster, I knew, okay, that makes a lot of sense out there. So Nash is a kid that, when he's in there, it's not necessarily, again, not a playmaker type of guy. And I mean that in a great way. Like we speak, as an O-line coach, we speak very complimentary of those guys that understand their role. He's taking up blocks. He's not getting reached. He's wrong arming when he needs to. And when we see that, you know that's a team player, and that allows those linebackers to run free and make plays. And it's a really talented group of linebackers that Centennial has coming with you. I think the Anderson kid has had an outstanding year so far. He fills gaps hard. And, you know, I've known his dad for a long time. A guy I certainly hold Taylor and high esteem. I know he's coaching for them right now. And Taylor's a guy that I've looked up to since college. He's older than me. I can say that right now. Yeah. Taylor's quite a bit older than me, but he's a guy that I've known who he is for over 20 years right now, and have really enjoyed watching his kids grow up. And yeah, when I watch Reed, I think it is, that's the one there. Sometimes get his younger two confused. I don't get Olivia confused, but yeah, Reed there, he fills gaps hard and he flows hard to the football, and he's just a tough kid. You know, Taylor's not a big guy, but he coaches his kids to play big.
Well, yeah, when you look at the Jaguars offense, you know, I think this might be the most talented group of skill players the Jaguars, you know, ever had under the Pizzettis. Quarterback Trenton Smith has completed 71% of his passes for 924 yards, and 15 touchdowns. And he's got several different receivers that he can throw to. Wide receiver Max Snyder has a team-high 17 catches for 269 yards. And tight end Chase Shedd, who's one of the best, you know, tight ends in the state, has 11 catches for 179 yards and five scores. In the backfield, running back Elijah Porter has rushed for nearly 500 yards and three TDs. And Porter, Braden Jackson, and Lawson Langford are all capable receivers coming out of the backfield. So your defensive coaches have their work cut out for them this week, don't they?
Well, yeah, when you put it like that, too, you're putting them in pretty high esteem when you talk about being some of the best that the Pizzettis have had. But you're right. I mean, you're going to pick out a lot of individuals over the course of the last, 40 years that Coach Pizzetti's been around. You can pick out a ton of individuals. I think Andy Brodell climbs to the top of that list of guys that were just so explosive when they touched the football. Of course, you know, coached against guys like Ben Allison and Joel Lanning together in the backfield and saw what they were able to do. But collectively, this group, there's so many different playmakers that you have to keep your eyes on, and you know, they'll beat on you for a little while and beat on you and beat on you, but they've added that element, some more run pass option in what they're doing this year. And I think with Trenton in his third year now of starting, they're able to expand their offensive playbook a little more. Those screens have been added to their playbook. That's made things more difficult. Some of those short passes that you think are pretty harmless all of a sudden turn into big gains. And Braden Jackson, certainly a guy that I've known for a long time and watched him grow up and know the speed and know the history of that family, and just seeing what's going on with a lot of those kids is pretty impressive. Shuddy's the other one. He just takes the top off you. You know, he's a guy that can line up tight, and all of a sudden there he goes down the middle of the field. A guy, he's kind of your get out of jail free card that you can throw the ball up to him, and now all of a sudden you've got to play. And he's another guy that I've known his dad for a long time and have always looked up to his dad too, and seeing Chase and the success he's had not only on the football field but on the basketball court has been a lot of fun to see what he's been able to do. And there's just so many different, as you go through, so many different playmakers and so many different things. You know, old school Pizzetti football, you know, they can pound on you and they fake it to three different guys and you don't even know who's got the ball, and before you know it, it's 4 yards after 4 yards, and all of a sudden 6 yards and 8 yards, and those carries get longer and longer throughout. I don't know that this team's actually, you know, built that way as some of the other ones. This is an explosive ball club that you can't rest at all. There's no such thing as, okay, it's third and one, keep them from getting the yard. It's third and one, well, yeah, we got to keep them from getting the yard, but they could go up top and all of a sudden 60 yards later they're in the end zone. So just a lot of different things to prepare for. Our defensive staff is really, really keyed in on tendencies. They're so good at personnel tendencies, at formational tendencies. They're really good at that. But there's just so many. I know they're talking to all the different looks that they get from Centennial, and it makes them difficult to prepare for. And when you can hide your athletes the way they do and move those guys around and get them into right spots, and you got to be keyed in on everybody, because if you're not, all of a sudden Trenton's going to find that guy that's open and see you later. And we saw that not only against, well, we saw it early on in the Ankeny game. We saw it throughout the whole Cedar Falls game when he had an outstanding night. And then, you know, that second half or second quarter on, really, for Southeast Polk, really saw him come on as well. So those are, you know, it's a really talented group. And you know they're going to have a good night. You just hope they don't have a great night against you, because it's not a matter of if they're going to put up a couple big plays, it's when.
Right. Well, you guys have beaten some good teams, but there probably isn't anybody that you've played that's really comparable to them, is there?
Not overall. You know, not the breadth of what they've got. And I think that's what makes this year's Centennial team really, really a threat, is because of the amount of weapons that they've got on the team. Cedar Rapids Kennedy, when we played them, they had some dudes on the lines, in the trenches. They had a wide receiver that was probably the best wide receiver we've seen this year as far as the plays that he's made, and that's no slight to anybody else. This guy was just, he was a dude out there. And so and it may have been more so that we weren't expecting that quite from them. They're traditionally a ground and pound type of team, and lean all over you. That they're 6'8", 385 pound tackle that just kind of leans on you, and he just committed to Iowa Iowa, so we've seen some big guys like that, and hopefully we never see one again unless I'm coaching him. That would be the goal. But yeah, they're going to be one of the, I mean, there's a reason they're ranked, what, four or five right now, and I think preseason that's about right where they were as well. And I said from the beginning of the year that I had them, you know, a lot of people ask, who's your top four? And I had them in the top four with Polk. I thought we had an opportunity to be really good, and I thought Valley had an opportunity to be really good. And as we sit here and look at it right now, Valley decimated by injuries. That was a team that I still think with some of the guys that they lost early on in the season, that's a team that was going to be right in the conversation at the end of the year. But, you know, that's, it's part of the game. It's an unfortunate part of the game. We all have them. But, man, when you have them in the key spots that Swenson's had them in, that's so hard to battle back from.
Well, it's hard to believe it's been 4 years since Dowling and Centennial played each other, because you guys used to play each other, you know, about every year, if not twice. The last meeting came in 2019, which resulted in a 31-10 win for the Maroons. And, of course, you have a couple of daughters that go to Centennial. So are you living in a house divided this week, or are your girls, you know, running out of Team Pollock this week?
You know, we actually, our conversations revolve a lot about volleyball right now at the moment. We don't talk a ton about football. Other than who's taking who to get him to the game, my big takeaway from that game, I didn't even realize it was 4 years ago. It's not too often that my family can all get to a game with us playing down in West Des Moines a lot, and my girls love to be part of the student section up here cheering on the Jags. And that was a night that we were able to get everybody to one game, and of course they stay pretty neutral in that. It's an interesting dynamic in our house. I mean, these are all my girls, you know, their friends that they're growing up with, guys that they're playing with and going to school with. They're Jags through and through right now. I think they don't mind seeing Dad win, but they really like, and I want my girls to be in a program, right? I want them to be in a place. I think football is such a great character builder. I think it's a sport where it just seems like how your football season goes can kind of dictate how the rest of the year goes. So I really think having a strong football program is important, and that's one of the reasons we really like having our kids. I've got four daughters. I really like having them grow up in the Centennial School District. First of all, I mean, as a dad of girls, what better place in the state of Iowa to have athletic daughters be at than a place like Centennial, with just some of the great traditions that we've got here, and starting up a new tradition right now in softball and what Coach Delaney's got going, but the short history of the volleyball program and what Jess has done, and Coach DeYoung there on the, you know, there's just, it's outstanding what we've got for girls athletics going on here. But the funny part is, and I just Monday took my girls out for what is a National Daughters Day, and they didn't have school, so took them out to lunch down at the Early Bird. Great restaurant, by the way, but yeah. Took him out to lunch down there, and we're sitting right beside Kim Pizzetti, and had a talk with Kim. And so my daughter plays volleyball with Kim and Ryan's daughter. So in the off season, we're hanging out, and it's just a different dynamic, right? When you're at a private school, or even being here where there's so many different schools and players. I mean, we've got coaches that are living in a bunch of different communities. You've got coaches that are on the north side that coach on the south side, and vice versa. You've got coaches in Johnston that are living in Ankeny, and, you know, just all different things. And we all got to get along, and I think for the most part people would be surprised at how friendly we all are with each other. I think genuinely a lot of us are pretty good friends out there. Really enjoy, have coached and hung out with, coached their kids, coached with a lot of the Centennial guys, some of the Ankeny guys too, and we've had a good time together. And at the end of the day, you know, we might end up at the cabaret that night enjoying with a cocktail and just chat about the game. I remember, gosh, it's been 6 or 7 years ago now, three different Centennial coaches, we had played them the night before in the playoffs, and the next morning, the four of us, there's three Centennial coaches and me, and we're sitting there talking about the game the night before as I coached their kids in a basketball game. Yeah. You know? I mean, it's just, that's the dynamic, and we've all got used to it. And, you know, you ask about my girls, and my freshman was saying the other day, she didn't think anything of it, but just grabbed a Dowling shirt. They've got a ton of them, right? And she grabbed a Dowling shirt out of her closet, and that's what she wore to practice that day.
Oh, wow.
Didn't think anything of it. And of course, gets a few comments, and my girls, they're used to it, and they take a lot of pride. Our family is pretty competitive, and they take a lot of pride in that stuff. And it's certainly been more interesting as I have kids in high school that get to be a part of that and see both sides of it. But they know at the end of the day, Dad wants them to cheer for the kids that they go to school with, and I'll live with it however the outcome ends up being. But it certainly be a lot easier for them with a Centennial win.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, what do you see as the keys to this game? You know, I'm guessing as the O-line coach, you feel like whoever controls the line of scrimmage is probably going to come out on top, don't you?
You know, maybe. And I say that because of the explosiveness that Centennial's offense brings to the table. I mean, we're going to probably grind it out a little bit more than what we have in the past. and, you know, take whatever little crack they might give us. We're going to try to take advantage of that. I think you're going to see a game that there's going to be a big special teams play at some point. You mentioned Bassett earlier. Man, when him punting is an issue. Like, he has so much hang time on that ball. It gets above the lights, can be tough to pick out. That's an issue right there. But I think you're going to see a big special teams play at some point, and that's probably going to be a big part of it. There's going to be probably a feeling out process early on from both teams to kind of see. We both had a lot of changes over the last couple of weeks with personnel and injuries and some things that we do. So I think you're going to see, like I said, a feeling out process early on. Just see, okay, what's your game plan tonight? And then adjust from there. So I know they'll have some things for us. We'll have some things for them. And we'll see what happens throughout the course of the evening. But at the end of the night, I say it's interesting because it's at the same time, it's equal parts just a game, but also more than a game. So there's a lot of fun stuff that goes along with it. And after those 48 minutes, or if it takes a couple extra overtimes to determine a winner or whatever it is, we're all going to have a good time after. And we'll enjoy living together here on the north side of Ankeny.
Well, of course, all these teams are fighting for playoff positioning. I mean, do you think the fact that Centennial's 3-2, I mean, is this game bigger for them than for you guys?
Yeah, Centennial's going to be fine. I mean, they'll be in the playoffs either way. I think we're both in good shape for getting into the playoffs. So I don't know that I'd put it on that. There's so much right now. There's going to be a lot of 5-4, 6-3 type teams, maybe even a couple 4-5 teams that slide into the playoffs this year, probably more so than ever. It's that, I think it's called the success model that the state of Iowa has come up with, and really stacked the schedules of teams who have traditionally been good, and then some of the teams that haven't been get a little bit easier. But I think that model where it's made records not look as good and made things difficult on some of the top teams, I think overall at the end of the day, if it hasn't got the best 16 teams into the playoffs, it's definitely got the best 8 teams to the quarterfinals. And ultimately the goal of that is that the best team, you know, they find the best 4 teams and get them to the dome and ultimately decide the state champion. So there's teams like Johnston that I think could play spoiler yet. I think people have started to write them off a little bit. Mm-hmm. But man, they Simpson, their tight end, and what they've got in Will Nuss at their quarterback, he's a cheat code man. I think once they settle him down a little bit, they've got some of the tools in place, maybe not to make a big run, but really to upset somebody and make somebody really mad and end their season early. Waukee is a team that people are just starting to talk about. We scrimmaged them in the preseason. We are very impressed with what Gabe's got going on over there right now. He's got his kid playing quarterback. Very elusive. I thought their defense was really good. They've got a former Centennial kid playing, I think it's wide receiver, maybe D-line or linebacker for them over there, the Curvey kid. So they're a team that could do some stuff. Waukee Northwest, who I know is still on Centennial's schedule, they're there. Like, they're just a good, solid team. I think this was they don't have anything flashy really going on for them right now, but they've just got some good pieces in place. And then you look over at the east side of the state, I really think Cedar Rapids Kennedy is still a good team, a really good team in what they can do. Bettendorf is a team this year that as they are kind of back to the Bettendorf of old. Mm-hmm. Pleasant Valley is a team that no one ever wants to play because they come at you with old school triple option wishbone, and no one wants to get ready for that. So you hope that somebody else has to go against Pleasant Valley early on and hopefully knock them out. So yeah, as we get ready, and you know, you focus on 1 week at a time. That's always a big part of it. But we're in an area where everybody knows each other. Everybody knows the pieces that everybody else has in store. Valley's still a team, I think, that could potentially upset somebody. I'm really, really impressed with the Hawks, the Ankeny Hawks, and what they've done to start their year. I think as you look at it right now, they have a very favorable schedule going forward. You're going to probably see them in one of the upper seeds. Mm-hmm. In the playoffs. They're the playmakers that they've identified. Their offensive line is really, really good. I'd count them amongst some of the best in the state down there of what they've done in opening things up in the run game, and then their ability to throw the ball up to Akers and let him make plays. And we've seen it firsthand up here on the north side of town too of what he can do. So that it's certainly going to be a fun ending to the year. I think there's a toss-up as far as what you might see in the dome at the end of the year, because there's a lot of teams that have maybe not the overall number of playmakers, the overall team, but a couple individual playmakers that if a game's close, guys that can take a game over at any given moment.
Oh, for sure. Well, this is obviously a big game for you guys Friday, but I know your team has another huge one coming up in 2 weeks when you go to Southeast Polk, and I know you aren't game planning for the Rams yet, but I'm sure you've come across some film of them while you've been prepared for Centennial and some of your other opponents. You know, what have you seen from Southeast Polk? I mean, they kind of look like the two-time defending champs, don't they?
Yeah, and we've seen their team for years. They just play such good defense. And, you know, I know a lot of times they talk about their offensive playmakers. Their defense can get overshadowed because, quite honestly, they don't put up huge numbers on defense because they're not on the field very much. Mm-hmm. they've got a big group of guys that have been playing for a long time, and where they've lost a lot of their star power that they've had in the past, right now they've just got a good solid team, and the group of wide receivers and quarterback that they have they work really well together. You know, their offensive line is always going to be well coached, but I look at it from a wow, their defense is really good. You have to find some holes in that defense. It's really hard to drive the ball on their defense, and you got to make some big plays against them, some explosive plays. So we'll have them in a couple weeks, week 8, I think. But if there's anything that the last 10 years or so have taught us since they've kind of gone to this different model, is that, you know, you learn from these regular season games and look forward to playing your best ball in the playoffs. Sometimes we've been on the positive side of that. Sometimes we've been on the negative side of that, but you learn from these regular season games and then you're ready to go when you get those last 4 weeks of the season.
Well, for sure. This game Friday should be a fun one. I'm looking forward to it. And hey, I'll see you there, Andy. Thanks for coming tonight.
We'll say hi.
You bet. All right, that was part one of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, sponsored by Coldwell Banker Mid-America. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Andy Pollack, Dowling Catholic's offensive line coach. And come back tomorrow night. We'll have part two of the podcast. We'll be talking a lot of Ankeny volleyball tomorrow night.